I'm Jason Hawk. He's Richard Smith. She's Allison Downing. This is Remote Patrol, where we get to talk about TV shows. Some are good, some are bad, some are somewhere in between. But tonight we get to talk about one that makes me very happy. Oh, so very happy. It was Rich's pick, but it was definitely on my list down the road. I wasn't sure how soon we should inflict it on Allison, Rich.
This was a return for form for this show. I am especially pleased to be doing this particular TV show this week.
Well, you're absolutely right when you say that it's a return to form, because we started off, the very first show that we ever did was Buck Rogers.
It was,
and that was a Glenn Larson show.
Yes.
And here we come, full circle. Glenn Larson did Knight Rider.
Oh, yeah. Do you see, one man can make a difference.
Very nice use of the tagline.
Thank
That's
you.
Impressive.
I was pleased with that.
Waiting to weave that in.
Yeah.
Knight Rider ran from 1982 to 1986. That's four seasons, but I was surprised at this one, Rich. 6.6 out of 10 rating on the IMDb. I thought it would be higher.
I didn't necessarily think it would be that high.
You see,
no?
I didn't think this would be a show that has stood the test of time at all.
Rose-tinted sunglasses, though, the golden past and all that.
Yeah. Well, I think it became immediately apparent to me that all I really remembered was that there was a guy called Michael and he had a car called Kit who was sarcastic, and there was a guy, but I can't remember his name, who was in charge of it all, and there were some explosions, and Michael ran around a lot and wore a leather jacket, and that's all I can kind of remember. But in my heart, it was an 8 or a 9. But
Knight Rider was my favorite show when I was 5 years old. But you're right, Allison. That's all that I could remember. The plot of this show, the first three episodes that we watched, is an absolute mess. It's a car wreck.
Oh, dear.
I still have no idea.
First one in particular was like, what am I watching?
I have no idea what was going on. I couldn't tell you the plot now, and I watched it yesterday and today. And I don't know what happened.
It's so distracting. There's so many things going on to distract you from the story. You're just going, what is this face and this voice about, and how separated are they? It's bizarre.
Rich, why don't you go ahead and tell the noobs what Knight Rider is about? Maybe we should do that. And then when you're finished with that, I brought some trivia.
Okay, noobs, listen up. Knight Rider is about Michael Knight, who works for... Am I right? The Knight Foundation.
And he's, that's correct.
The Knight Foundation are a sort of organization that also fight crime, but do it very cleverly. And they're allowed to fight crime, even though they're not the police or the army or anything
we
like
don't,
that.
We don't know why, really.
It's all fairly ambiguous, that. I'm not really sure what's going on. But the upshot of it is that Michael Knight is like this one dude with this really awesome car called the Knight 2000, which is a 1982 Trans Am, which was probably very cool in 1982.
Yeah.
It's a bit dated now, but in 1982, awesome car. And it talks, and the voice of the car is Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World.
Exactly.
And every week, they get up to a different adventure, solving a crime. It's a little bit like the A-Team in terms of its structure. Only instead of being soldiers of fortune, it's a dude in his car. That's pretty much it. It's almost the same show now I think about it.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it's in my notes here to talk about. You know, I always come armed with notes.
I do
you
know
do.
This.
Oh, my goodness. Preparedness is your middle name.
This show is all about that lone drifter motif that you see. The A-Team is the very first show that I have listed there as an example, where you have a band of people who rove from town to town, remaining almost anonymous until someone needs them.
Yeah.
And if you can find them, then they'll help you out of a jam. Clint Eastwood's Man with No Name, just about any Western movie, really.
Yeah.
Zatoichi, The Incredible Hulk was an example.
Yeah. I was going to say. It seems that it's a bit of an advantage if you're an attractive single mother. Then you are kind of much more likely to find and meet Michael Knight and get him to give you a hand.
Well, he likes the ladies as well, doesn't he?
He does a fair bit.
And we haven't spoken about this, but he didn't start as Michael Knight, did he? He's clearly got a surname from the Knight Corporation, whatever.
Yeah.
He wasn't Michael Knight in the first episode.
Oh, the first two episodes, it's a two-parter that introduces you to his backstory. And he's originally... Was it a narcotics cop or just an undercover officer?
I have no idea. I was so distracted by his face.
Well, he starts off without his face, which is the weirdest thing about this show. They do this odd Doctor Who thing where in the very first episode, they give him a regeneration for no reason at all.
Yeah.
He gets shot and he almost dies. The Night Corporation saves him and they give him reconstructive face surgery.
Yeah, to hide him from the bad guys who surely must want to kill him.
Well, no, because his face is a mess. Because it explains that he's got a metal plate on his head fitted.
It's called getting Mark Hamill'd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the bullet bounced off the... Did my microphone keep coming out?
That was weird, yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that.
Okay.
Where was I? Yeah, the bullet...
Oh, dear.
The metal plate.
That's both of us.
This keeps cutting out. Hang on, we're having a technical issue here.
You know, I can hear you both on this side.
Are you hearing anything going wrong with what... when we're speaking to you?
Not at all. Okay. So maybe Skype is okay, but something with the wire there?
What, audio out to us?
That's entirely feasible.
But the mic... I don't know them...
Was it happening when I got... No, it wasn't happening when I got loud or anything. I can't... That's... Okay. We'll carry on.
Oh.
So the bullet hits him on the metal plate and bounces out of his face.
Yeah.
So he needs facial reconstructive surgery to look like David Hasselhoff. My favourite bit was when they said, we'll never know what he looked like before. Like, well...
Nobody got any photos.
Until he wakes up and tells you. You know, maybe. It's not a mystery.
Some people saw him before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he probably had a driver's license on him.
Exactly.
He got different coloured hair as well, and it went curly.
No, he had basically the same hair.
It wasn't...
Yeah, I did. It was. It was almost the same exact haircut.
It wasn't in the Hasselhoff League, though.
Oh, I think that's the first time that we've mentioned the H word.
Yeah.
Nobody's mentioned all this way that it's the sex, the absolute sex that is David Hasselhoff.
Oh, dear.
I don't have a single problem with David Hasselhoff whatsoever.
Would you kiss him, though?
What is kind of a question is that?
Well, that's where we're at right now. You know, him being sexy and gorgeous and delicious, and we want to see him and look at him.
As a straight man, no, I wouldn't. You know, he would have to be pretty goddamn sexy.
And he never was.
Well, okay then.
I don't know. Maybe there are women out there who disagree with me.
Subjectively,
but no.
Looking at him in 1982, that's a good-looking guy.
Did any girls have posters of him on their walls? Or?
I'm sure some did.
I don't know.
Just because you never.
Well, maybe that's because I was never friends with those kinds of
you
guys.
You like weird-looking guys, though.
Like who?
I'm just sitting here as proof of that, dear.
Fair comment.
He's fairly strong-jawed, and he's got the nice prominent cheekbones and the bright blue eyes and all that. I would say that if I were a woman, I would find him attractive.
He has got lovely hair. That is just lovely hair. Don't you want to run your fingers through that hair?
Not really.
Nice and feathery.
I bet it's got more product in it than mine ever does.
No, that is natural. That is just what his hair is like in 1982.
But he was tall and he kind of like the athletic statuesque kind of thing going on. And he was a good clothes horse. You know, he looked well in clothes. And maybe that was... Oh, dear.
Keep talking.
I can kind of... Oh, I'm back. This is weird. I could kind of hear you through my left ear. It's definitely an audio out.
I think you're going to have to talk through it. Just ignore it when it happens.
I'll try my best. Okay.
Well, just ignore it when it happens, because otherwise I'll have to edit all the way through, just cutting you out, going, oh, I've gone again. So,
I know.
So, you know.
I'll keep talking even though I can't really hear myself. And I don't know what's going to happen if Jason starts speaking. And now no one's speaking, I don't think. I don't know.
I think you were talking.
I honestly don't know what's going on here. Anyway. But
this is quite drastic anyway.
Sorry, we're having technical difficulties. I'm going to have to just ramble so I can tell when the sound comes back. This can't be a loose connection. Can it?
Yeah. Because I'm only hearing you through the left can. I can't hear myself at all. I can't hear Jason, but I can hear you this. No, when it cuts out, that's all I can hear. It's just through my left can.
So you still can't hear me? I
can hear you now. I can hear you now because things are okay right now. But when we were out, I could only hear myself atmospherically, you know, diegetically. I couldn't hear anything through my headphones apart from when Richard spoke. Hear a tiny little bit through my left ear, and now it's coming in and out, and it feels
weird. That was
weird.
Pressing buttons then. Don't worry about
that. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say I heard it that time too, so...
But that was you messing.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I honestly don't know. This is a brand new problem, and it's just doing it, and it's just stopping doing it, and I don't know what to suggest at this point. I don't even know which of the two boxes is doing it. I imagine it's the more expensive one, because that's how the world works.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Let's just carry on.
So he's not good looking at all, Allison? Not even if you were looking at him with German eyes.
The Germans fucking love him.
They do as well. I don't know. Maybe it's just my age. I was too young to fancy him in the day. And not fancying him at all now. Really.
I thought that even in his most recent pictures. I mean, he's a pretty boy when he was, what, like 25 in Knight Rider or whatnot? But his recent photos... If you can throw away all his family baggage and the whole thing with him drunk eating a cheeseburger on YouTube or whatever it was.
I can't.
He still looks cut. He still looks like a good-looking guy, I think.
Let's have a look. Even
he's cut. He's muscly. He's not grown the Val Kilmer route.
No.
For a guy in his 60s, he's fine.
But, you know, you got to ask yourself the question of, Would you prefer to spend time in the company of a person who spends that much time at the gym or with a person who spends that much time at a buffet? And I've got to land on the side of the buffet guy, really. So I'd rather have dinner with Val Kilmer.
Once again, I'm sat here as living proof of that one.
I was going to say, no wonder we get along so well.
Yeah. I'm not the guy at the gym all the time.
I'm the buffet guy, not the buff guy. The buff guy likes himself too much. He got that way by looking at himself a lot.
Well, I tell you what, I did bring 7 quick trivia questions about Knight Rider with me.
Okay.
But based on our conversation so far, I think the both of you, if you put your heads together, or really just Rich, you're going to ace these pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just like suck out on this.
This will be good. This will be good.
Go on.
This is, Rich, you've already answered half of these for crying out loud, and I accidentally just let one of the answers slip.
Oh, dear.
So, number one, KIT, Michael Knight's car, is an acronym. What does it stand for?
Knight.
Industries.
Industries 2000.
Knight Industries 2000 is the correct answer.
Yay!
Number two, what model car is KIT?
He's a Trans Am.
He's a Trans Am.
What? 1982 Pontiac Trans Am. Rich said all that before, so he gets the bell. Now, here's an interesting one. Of Mitch Buchanan, Craig Pomeroy, or Trevor Cole, what was the name of the lifeguard played by David Hasselhoff on Baywatch?
Mitch Buchanan.
Mitch, yeah.
It was definitely Mitch.
It was.
Number four. David Hasselhoff sang what number one German pop chart single while dancing atop the Berlin Wall as it fell in 1989?
Oh, what is it? Ah.
I don't know what
this
song is.
Oh, I do, because it's going to come back to me.
They play the clip every time that they talk about the Berlin Wall.
They do, and he's all in black leather on top of a bus or something.
Swinging crap over his head.
Yeah.
Gyrating his hips like he thinks he's Elvis.
What the fuck is that song?
I'm not going to guess it.
Looking for freedom. Apparently, he's had a long and storied pop history there.
They absolutely adore him. I went there when I was 14 years old, so 1945. No, something about 1980 something.
She was a double agent for the Allies.
1988. It was 1988. That's when we went. And he was already huge then. And the wall came down in 89, so he was big noise already in the 80s. And I don't know whether it was necessarily the children who liked him, because I stayed with a family and I was matched with the girl there who was my age, and she really liked British pop music. Most German kids do, and it was the 20-year-old women that really liked him.
You know, I'm just thinking about this for the first time. I think that the fall of the Berlin Wall is the first kind of event in my lifetime that I can look back and use as an anchor for my personal long view on history. Mm. Like if I were to say I lived through, I think the Berlin Wall, the fall of the Berlin Wall would be the first thing on there that would, at least that would pop into mind, because I mean, I was alive for the Iran-Contra affair and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me too.
But 1989, fall of the Berlin Wall, that was like when I started paying attention, if nothing else.
Yeah. Oh, I think I was paying attention before then, but not really. I was trying to write things down and be clever by about 1980. I remember doing a journal, writing things like and drop off and things like that down as presidents changed over in Russia. But I didn't really get socially conscious like that until around about that time, especially about Germany. I mean, I'd been there by then. I couldn't imagine that there was another bit that I wasn't allowed to go to. And
see, I never visited pre-down wall Germany.
Mm.
All my visits have been after the war came.
See, I was there.
But then, strangely, all to bits that would have been in West Germany anyway.
Yeah. And I went when I was 11 as well. So, yeah, the wall was up. I haven't been since the wall's been down.
Oh, no? I thought that Germany would be a hop, skip, and a jump, like a weekend vacation for you guys.
I guess it could be.
Kind of like me scooting over to New York from Ohio.
Yeah, it would be. The flights would only be about an hour or so, an hour and a half, maybe. Depending on where you were flying, obviously.
I did also just Google the first Persian Gulf War, because I was trying to remember if that was 89 or 90 that started. I knew that it was definitely after the election of the first George Bush.
Yeah.
But it was
1990,
August
2nd.
Yeah, August 2nd, 1990, yeah. Operation Desert Storm.
I was on holiday in France at the time.
See, that's the first sort of thing I really remember being perfectly aware of. God, that seems late in my life. I was really uninterested in the world for quite some time.
Oh, yeah?
See, I was alive for the Falklands War, but don't really remember any of it.
Mm,
I was quite young for that, sort of 3 or 4. And sensitive, my parents wouldn't have talked to me about it.
Yeah.
But after
I got really engaged in the first Persian Gulf War. I mean, I was watching all the nightly news reports, and then you didn't have the internet, so you did have to watch Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
And I had maps of the area, and I was really scared because, I mean, the Cold War had existed, as witnessed by the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
But it was my first actual real send-in-the-troops kind of war.
Yeah, and it was all over the newspapers and TVs and pictures of troops out there.
And well, especially with all the news about the Daily Scud and Patriot missile exchanges and all that kind of stuff, I was really terrified. I was actually keeping track on those maps of where all the missiles fell.
And we were being shown more of the war than we've ever been as well. We were being shown the footage taken from the cameras mounted to the bottoms of bombers.
That was the best bit about it, was because we've got showed video of how awesome
it the best
we are
bit? It's
at
never
war.
Happened since. It's never happened since. We've never had that level of access to watch buildings and vehicles being blown up in front of our very eyes. It hasn't happened since.
It's old news now.
Maybe it was a mistake to show us that level of warfare.
I think it was a good idea. It's a shame it doesn't still happen.
I don't know.
I think more transparency is always better.
I don't know. It was quite sad.
There's a lot of valid criticism to be made about Afghanistan and, late Iraq, but that they were both invisible wars, just like Korea.
Mm.
the less that you have the public engagement in a war like that, the less public outcry that there is, the less news coverage that there is and footage, the less people are engaged or invested in it, especially when it's a relatively low casualty war. I mean, not to crap all over the about 6,000 people who have died in Afghanistan, but compared to D-Day or the United States Civil War, very low casualty.
Oh, how many people have died in the Mexican drug war? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Question number five, hoping to pick up off of that.
Do you remember we were doing a podcast?
Oh, yeah, we were, yeah.
About, what was it?
I was just biting my tongue like, don't talk about Afghanistan.
Can they get rid of that thing? Number five, William Daniel, who played the voice of Kit, is perhaps better known for his role as Principal George Feeney on what kid-friendly sitcom that ran from 1993 to 2000?
Allison?
I'm going to say the wrong one.
It's Boy Meets World.
Boy Meets World is correct. Still airs every morning in syndication.
It's coming back.
Is it?
Well, yeah.
Girl Meets World.
All right.
Girl Meets World is in pre-production right now. It's apparently Corey and Topanga's kids.
I'm excited.
It's all meaningless to me.
Yeah, but no, not going to watch it at all.
Number six, what veteran actor of Tombstone, Top Gun, and Batman Forever provided the voice of Kit in the 2008 reboot of Knight Rider?
Say that again. Sorry.
What veteran actor of Tombstone, Top Gun, and Batman Forever?
It's got to be Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer,
yeah. It is Val Kilmer. What was that, a GTO? In that one, they switched over the car. It wasn't a Trans Am anymore.
No
really?
Idea.
It
no
changed
idea.
Cars.
Pretty sure it was a Mustang or something.
Incidentally, I've located our technical problem.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's the headphone output thing on the main mixer that's fucking up. So I'm just, when it goes, I just twiddle the knob and it seems to come back.
Okay.
But that seems to be what it is.
Yeah.
Because nice. If Jason can hear us okay, then it's not the same going.
I think it's. I thought it was a headphone out.
That was my hunch the whole time.
Yeah, mine too.
Which basically means there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, it just sometimes sounds like we're underwater, but it's fine. It's fine.
Number seven, final trivia question here for you, and then we can talk more about the show.
Okay.
The voice of Carr, K-A-R-R, the evil version of Kit, much like Data's Lore. Was done by what actor? Best known for voicing Optimus Prime.
Oh, I knew you. I can't remember his name at all.
I have no idea.
Is it Philip something?
You're close. It's Peter something.
Peter something. Oh, Peter. No, I'll know it when you say it.
It's Peter Cullen.
Right, Peter Cullen, of course.
He did Xandar on G.I. Joe. He was Monterey Jack on Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
Was he really?
He was.
I had idea about that one.
He was uncredited as the voice of the Predator.
Wow. That is quite a body of work there.
Looking over his list, though, I think he probably got the most bank from his Eeyore paychecks.
He was
Several versions of Winnie the Pooh.
Wow. That's quite impressive. Although I was already impressed. Andy's been on the Masters of None show.
Oh, has he really?
He has, I believe. I think at the beginning of their show, they have a This is Masters of None in his Optimus Prime voice. Or they have had. I can't have made that up in my brain. That must be real. That must be real. That happened.
It's easy to lose track with all the good guests that they have on there. I've got to get them to be my agent and get some good guests on Atomic Trivia War.
Exactly. We all need that. Right then. Knight Rider.
What we haven't talked about so far is the car. I mean, we've mentioned what model it is.
Yeah.
But Kit's not just a car. Kit's a sidekick.
He does everything. He's got so many cool little gadgets attached to him that you forget that he's just a sarcastic little shit, really. Because I do find him really sarcastic, and I like that about him. He doesn't he doesn't just kowtow to his human master.
It struck me while we were watching it that it must be well written, because you accept that the car is a character.
Of course you do.
It doesn't come off as dumb, and it should, because it's a guy talking to his car.
I do visualise Mr. Feeny in a small box in underneath the hood, though.
Well, that's how they filmed it.
Yeah.
Did they really? Because was something in the trivia that said that Hasselhoff and Feeny never met until the end of the first season casting. Or what was it, a Christmas party or something like that where they first met face-to-face?
My goodness.
Yeah, you wouldn't have William Daniels out there filming. You'd just have, there'll be a producer reading his line.
Exactly.
Or maybe someone even much lower on the chain than that.
And another little interesting thing picked up from the trivia is that William Daniels didn't want to be credited. And if you watch the credits, he isn't credited.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, well, he was on, what was he on? Like Picket Fences or something at the same time? I can't remember.
Was it Saint Elsewhere? I know it was on that.
Oh, yes, it was. It was Saint Elsewhere. But, yeah, I mean, he was the serious actor. He wouldn't want to be in some stupid science fiction show.
Is it science fiction? I suppose it is, isn't it?
Well, you have an artificial intelligence, a catty artificial intelligence who has a prissy personality. I think that was some good writing.
I think at most it qualifies for with a sci-fi twist. It's a cop show with a sci-fi twist. Sort of thing.
Would you say it's a little bit of a Western as well?
It is a bit. It kind of looks like one.
Hmm.
It's always filmed in that rather desolate area of California. It's all kind of a bit mountainous.
It does. It looks desert-y and scrub, doesn't it?
That intro was filmed in Utah. That's the Utah Salt Flats that they race across.
And
very famous place. It appears in lots and lots and lots of movies.
The one that we've watched tonight, the one with the nuclear tactical weapons, that looked like it was filmed in the Nevada desert in some bits and then in grassed hillland somewhere else, like Montana.
Yeah, some of the cuts were a bit
It was
off.
A bit like, okay, we get that the soldiers are not in the same field. They're not even in the same state, let's be fair.
Yeah. Do you know what? It was fun, but it didn't grab me as much as I thought it might.
Yeah, that's the thing. Where's the excitement that I can remember? Where is that bit? Because that is vastly lacking.
I think you need to be 5 or 6.
Do you? Because I don't get it. Watching as an adult, I'm like, who is that? And why are they there? And what is this bit of the story? And all of it. As a 5-year-old, are you really just watching the Michael and the car? What? And the flashing lights on the front and the... Is it the music? I think it's the music.
If they made it today, what kind of show would it be the peer of?
They did make it today. They made it in 2008 and it failed miserably.
Oh, I saw the pilot and it was awful low. I mean, I think to be fair, the original series it's got some charm to it. And it's got a nice kind of... One of the, I honestly think the pairing of David Hasselhoff and William Daniels is really good. And it's one of those things you can't plan for. It just happens.
Yeah.
And even though they're not even doing their scenes together, there is a nice chemistry there between the two characters. And I think when they remade it, they just didn't have any of that. And plus, who wants to sit and listen to Val Kilmer other than Val Kilmer?
I think you are right, though, Allison, when you talk about all the waiting that was going on while you were watching this. Because the parts, I mean, I suspect that Rich and I were all about the computers aspect of it.
Yeah, well, I think I was, too. Because I didn't really care what he was doing running around. That bit was silly to me.
Yeah. The car was the cool bit. But the time that you actually get with Kit and the artificial intelligence aspect and all the buttons and the cockpit that looks like a jet plane or a spaceship, they say at one point.
Yeah.
That comes very seldom. I mean, most of the time it is a detective show outside of the car, and it's very slowly paced in that 1979-1982 way.
Yeah, it's just a bit odd, and we've got to have so much incidental music everywhere. I mean, I do love the music. I think once you hear the theme, you know, the synth come in, I really think it's great, because you're watching the car at that point. And I can't imagine watching this as a kid and thinking, I'm going to wait for the next bit of the car. through
the
all of this
the
rubbish.
Key,
bit.
Though.
It really
the car
was
absolutely the key. Because Glenn Larson said that when he thought of this show, when he dreamed it up, he wanted to do the Lone Ranger with a car.
Yeah, sure. And I get that. I really do.
In some ways, I guess this is a precursor to Firefly with some of that genre bending.
Who was this show made for? What was the target age group of this show? Because it's not gritty and sophisticated enough to be for adults, and it's not necessarily childish at all to be aimed. I wouldn't say it's aimed at kids.
You know, I don't think that it was actually made for an age range. I think that it was made for a class range. I think that it was made for white rural men.
Yeah.
I think that I it was very much a spiritual successor to the Dukes of Hazzard.
Which is also a children's program, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we watched these things as kids, because we were kids when they were on.
And they were on at 5 o'clock on Saturday or Sunday evening.
Yeah, they weren't aimed at my mum and dad.
No, they were for us. But then Knight Rider was in the same kind of slot that had Airwolf in it, and the other one... the motorbike one.
Street Hawk,
that one. As far as I'm concerned, it was in that lump was Knight Rider. Because it wasn't about David Knight, it was about Kit.
Michael Knight.
Yeah, did I just call him David again?
Yeah.
I do that all the time,
I've
too.
I've done it so much tonight, I've just been calling him David all night. I'm sorry, you're not that... That's the thing, Michael Knight is not the thing. Michael's the object of Kit's disdain sometimes, you know, when he, Michael, kind of, the way that he says his name. It's about Kit. It's about his sarcasm and his wit and what he can make that card do.
Or in some cases, what the car can make Michael do. Yeah. I thought that was kind of an interesting little thing that they didn't, at least in the first three episodes, explore.
No.
Because I seem to remember that as the show goes on, Kit seems to push Michael along. Like Michael's the puppy.
Yeah, definitely.
That Kit is training.
I definitely saw it like that. It feels like the car's in control.
I definitely feel like Kit is the intelligent, controlled adult in the situation.
Definitely.
But
you do get that scene in the first episode where Michael falls asleep at the wheel and Kit takes over.
Yeah.
And then walks him through how to get past the cops when he gets pulled over.
I actually think
he is his babysitter.
Kit is the Spock to Hasselhoff's Kirk. That is the character relationship we have. We have
38 minutes for a Star Trek reference.
Yeah.
You're slowing down. You're getting old.
Sorry.
You can do it inside 20.
Yeah, that's true. Because you've got the serious, controlled adult, the sensible one, who knows what to do to get the job done and isn't ruled by his passion and his excitement and everything. And then you have the Kirk character, or the Hoff character, which is the very passionate, very excitable character that would rather run into danger and get killed straight away than stop and think about stuff for a minute.
Here's something interesting, trivia. This was on IMDb, and I think it's hilarious. I don't like to just have these shows be just reading IMDb trivia, but this one was too good to pass up. Michael Knight was originally not supposed to be, apparently, from what this says, the excitable, talkable character. Did you see this? According to Brandon Tartikoff, the head of programming at NBC during the 80s, the inspiration for the series came when NBC execs started complaining about the problems of casting handsome leading men in TV series. Yeah. Because many of them couldn't act. Tartikoff and his assistant came up with a concept for a TV show called The Man of Six Words. Each show would begin with the leading man getting out of a woman's bed and saying, "Thank you." Occasionally throughout the show, the leading man would say, "Okay," when receiving orders from his boss. Then he would chase down some villains and say, "Freeze." Finally, when the people he had saved from death would thank him, he would say, "You're welcome." For the rest of the show, the car would do all the talking.
I don't think that's a terrible idea for a TV show.
Although Tartikoff had meant the pitch to be a joke, the NBC executives liked the idea of a TV show about a man with a talking car and approved it for development.
It would be better than Honey Boo Boo, and that exists.
Well, exactly.
So, you know.
I don't
understand. You have some actors out there who could pull it off with just the force of their personality without having to talk. Like, think about Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
How many
yeah.
lines did he have in No Country for Old Men?
About 5, and they all made me want to die.
There you go. He could do
you
it.
You don't have to be verbose. You don't have to have a lot of lines exactly. to be scary. As a matter of fact, I think that that's another archetype that exists. What is it?
The Silent Man. There's the Ryan Gosling yes. character in Drive as well, who barely says a word all the way through the film. There's lots of them.
I can't believe I can't remember this guy's, but there's a
Zatoichi didn't talk at all at first.
Duke Togo, what's his name? The assassin, the Japanese cartoon assassin. Anyway, he hardly ever talks. And he's deadly and scary as shit.
Yeah. Chilling. Men a few words. Chilling. Speak up or we think you're creepy. That is what I'm saying.
But again, that just proves that the car was supposed to be the focus, and it's no surprise that this show, Knight Rider, makes me want to go buy some Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars for my daughter.
Exactly, that's how it made me feel as well, you know, the ones that you could rev up backwards and send around a loop-de-loop. I love those.
And isn't it interesting that all those crime-fighting shows, you mentioned Airwolf in the same time slot?
Yeah.
All those crime-fighting shows back in the 80s were about the vehicle. Dukes of Hazzard, I mentioned, was about the General Lee.
Chips.
Magnum was all about that Ferrari.
It was, yeah.
The A-Team had that van.
Chips had the little motorbikes on the highway patrol.
Yeah, yeah. Or even if you jump over to movies like the Ghostbusters, Ambulance, Smokey and the Bandit's car.
Scooby-Doo's wagon.
The Transformers, all that. I mean, it was all about... I guess they were aimed at boys, but definitely that young male attachment to vehicles.
The thing with
and
vehicles
merchandising.
Is, yeah, they make good toys.
Exactly.
That's what the thing is there. I mean, goodness sake, for some franchises, they make up vehicles when the characters don't have them at all. I've seen in Toys R Us, you can buy Spider-Man spider car. You're like,
really?
I'm pretty sure that there was never a spider car.
Kind of don't need one. He sort of spins webs and swings.
Yeah. But you can buy
but
the car.
Also, unless he's also in a village. A reason why I said that I think that this show wasn't necessarily aimed at necessarily so much of an age range as it was a class. Because it was about, you know, people who worked with cars or built cars or fixed cars. It was very much a part of the American rural landscape.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't supposed to be this Trans Am, was it? It was supposed to be something else, but Pontiac had just brought out this firebrand one.
And
it got replaced quickly at the last minute. It's just marketing, isn't it? Get that car on there. Let's see how many we can sell.
Which car was that it was supposed to be? I can't remember.
Let me see. It was supposed to be a Datsun. A 280ZX. But General Motors recently introduced the F-body Firebrand Trans Am was substituted in pre-production. That was just... Show off our new car, please.
Can you imagine, though? I mean, Datsun might still be around if Knight Rider had used that car.
Exactly.
Because think about, I mean, Pontiac's not around anymore, so that's kind of a bad example. But at the time, Pontiac couldn't keep up with the orders for Trans Ams because of this show.
I bet. I bet it was hugely successful for them.
And I did read somewhere else, too, that the conversion kits to have the Cylon red flashing lights on the front.
Flashing at the front, yeah. You could still buy those years after as well.
Those were in huge demand. I mean, you go to... The car shows are still a thing here. I'm not sure how much they are so much over there, but car shows in Ohio are definitely a huge thing. You can go to any car show and see a kit.
They're a thing. I've never been to one, but my brother's got pictures of him by a kit and by... A Ferrari F1 car.
I bet David Hasselhoff owns one of these. There was one in his Jump in My Car video.
Was there? Oh,
you would.
See, that's just awful.
If he were the Hoff. I mean, that's his claim to fame. That's his income. You would own one.
I would own one.
I was just thinking about whether I'd get in his car.
I'd own a Knight 2000 and Pamela Anderson. No. A Knight 2000 and Yasmin Bleeth, who I actually bet you could right now as well.
Yeah, where did she go?
I don't know.
Jail. Except, I mean, rehab.
Rehab and jail, I think.
Really? Was it that
bad? Was it heroin with her?
Something like it. I might have been a lot of coke. I just remember seeing lots of pictures of her looking quite emaciated and not well and stuff. It was all downhill after basketball.
Oh, she was in basketball, wasn't she?
Yeah, hell yeah. I've seen that movie 100 times.
Maybe. There's a movie we should do on the Atomic Trivia War 9000 Blockbuster Summer.
Oh, are you sure? Because it's actually good.
There was that picture of her, wasn't there?
There were many pictures of Yasmin Bleeth. She played the younger sister of the woman.
That one that I was talking
that
about.
That one, yeah.
Oh, dear.
She was the younger sister of the woman who was on that film we watched the other night. What was that? Christine.
Oh, yeah.
The girl who was in Christine, who became the flat-chested, serious feminist one in Baywatch, was the older sister of Yasmin Bleeth.
Right. Right.
That's what I know about that. I believe David... I think he made a crap ton of money off Baywatch, you know.
I think Baywatch arguably made him a bigger name and richer than Knight Rider.
Absolutely. I mean, Baywatch...
I mean, Knight Rider is going to persist more in the cultural consciousness just because of the role that it filled in 1982.
Maybe. It's that statistic of... There are two TV shows ever that I've heard that you can... Or at one point, there was an episode playing at some point anywhere in the world. Somewhere in the world at any point during the day. And those two shows were Star Trek and Baywatch.
And I think that I heard once, too, that Baywatch, because of the syndication of it, was the most profitable TV show of all time.
Entirely possible.
Really? Crikey.
I kind of doubt that now that I actually hear myself say it, but...
It wouldn't surprise me. It was everywhere, and it was massive in Japan and stuff like that.
And it didn't cost very much to film either.
It must have cost about $50 and a good sunny day in Malibu. That was it.
So maybe if they're talking about the percentages on it,
I think maybe
it could be the most profitable that way. I mean, maybe not gross, but definitely percentage.
Yeah. I mean, these were just pretty people. They weren't pulling massive incomes. The biggest income would have been David Hasselhoff. And then Pamela Anderson's popularity would have gained, but she wouldn't have been paid a great deal in the early days. But there must have been quite a huge amount of syndication the world over and a lot of orange suits sold, you know, swimsuits.
What did you think, Rich, of the cheesecake that we got? Not Hasselhoff. Now, don't get excited. But the female cheesecake that we got in the third episode of Knight Rider.
It's all very much a product of its
time. Is this Ms. Ladd?
No, did she come back in the series? I don't think she did.
You talking about the one who works with Devon?
Right. Patricia McPherson was the actor or actress. She was on the show for the first season and got kicked out the second season, kind of like a Beverly Crusher kind of thing.
Right.
But then came back for the third and fourth. And there was always the Monty Penny tension with her.
Yeah.
It's a cute, nice little character. Nothing wrong with it. It makes a nice change to put a woman in the role of the person who looks after the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably was somewhat socially revolutionary at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Didn't even occur to me watching it now. But, she wasn't classically beautiful either.
No.
So I kind of wondered about that.
No, it did feel like she was there to be the plain Jane, but the fixer and the one woman that he's not going to flirt with. Because he is very flirty.
How would he not be, though? Sorry, I'm caught up on the Wikipedia page.
I think he's come to terms with his new identity very, very well. Maybe it's been made very easy for him, I don't know.
That was one other thing that struck me, that when someone says to you, you've undergone facial reconstructive surgery, if you woke up and looked like David Hasselhoff in 1982, you would see that as a positive.
Yeah, you'd be all right with it, I think.
Because when you think of facial reconstructive surgery, you think of people who've kind of got a face, but they're still a fucking mess.
Mm.
You know? And that's what you would expect it to be. But no, you look like David Hasselhoff. Oh, well, that's okay. That's okay. And I've got a nice new car. Awesome. Brilliant. I should get shot in the face a lot more often.
Speaking of the car, I was wondering, did you have any problems with Kit?
It looks like something off Scrap Heap Challenge now.
It hasn't aged well, but it was. You can only blame that on it being a program that featured advanced technology in a period when technology was changing more than it ever had throughout human history.
Hmm.
And so what looked really advanced in the early to mid-80s now looks laughable.
Yeah, I know.
Or in some cases, prescient, because I kept thinking of you, Rich. I kept thinking you were going to bring up Siri.
I was talking about Siri while we were watching it, actually, and saying that this is how I'd want Siri to be. I'd kind of want him to be impertinent sometimes. And, you know, to have a real sense that it was a real person. And right now, I don't think we've got that yet. We haven't. We haven't got a rounded personality in this person that we talk to and ask for help. And
I know they're working on it.
I do love it. And I like that he's got this kind of, oh my God, he's stupid, kind of personality. This aloofness that comes from being in a voice box somewhere in this car. And I really love that. And I do hope that one day my voice control person is a well-rounded human being who's got this kind of sharp acerbicness to them.
We do know within technology circles that a year...
It's been written, isn't it?
A little while ago, Apple posted job listings for creative writers specialising in dialogue and character development.
Yeah.
That's what we know.
It's coming.
So I'm all for that.
You know, it might not be ready yet, but there are definitely people working on it. This stuff inspires what we get and what we use.
And the more we can humanize it, the more we feel good using it, and that it's comfortable.
Yeah,
we're not talking to a box. You know, sometimes it's still astounding. The whole thing is astounding that you can talk to a machine at any level. But if it's got a personality and he's a fully formed human, as well as being so massively technologically helpful, it's the pinnacle, I think. We want Majel Barrett, really, ideally.
Oh, yeah. Even
the computer voice should be hers.
You know, the people at Ford have said, you know, We've got stuff we can put in a car today that you can't handle.
Yeah, it will make you shit a brick.
We have to bring this stuff out one tiny little bit at a time and just let you come to terms with the fact that your car can park itself. And once you're ready for that, then we'll bring out the next little thing. But today we have got stuff that will blow your fucking mind.
See, I don't believe that for a minute, because Ford's financial picture is just bad enough that they need to put out everything that they've got right now.
Are they doing bad,
they are
though?
Not do. Well, I mean, they were one of the ones that during the start of the recession, they specifically did not ask for a government bailout. So they were ahead of the American car competition as far as that goes. But their sales are not good. I mean, they're getting just absolutely pantsed by Honda and Toyota.
I suppose so. My parents are going for I can't even remember now. It's a weird... It's a foreign one. It's not Ford anyway. I don't know why I don't think of Ford as a foreign car.
Yeah, exactly. But there you go. It used to be British. It's not anymore.
It was never British.
Was it not? Ford. Ford Motor Company. Of course not. No.
Yeah, there you go.
Henry Ford, American.
Yeah. American.
Let's see here. I'm just Googling real fast to try to find what's moving. U.S. auto sales. Wall Street Journal. Here we go. July 2nd, 2013. Okay.
That's pretty up to date. I'll accept those figures.
I was reading. Okay. Go on.
June sales numbers. The Ford F-Series pickup is the best-selling car in the United States. So I was wrong.
Pickup. You see, that just... We've got about three of them over here, really.
68,000 pickups sold in the United States in June. After that, it was Chevy Silverado, which is Chevy's version of the pickup, 43,000. Then it's the Toyota Camry, Chevy Cruze, Honda Accord, Honda Civic, Dodge Ram, Ford Escape, Nissan Altima, Honda CR-V. The list keeps on going.
Mm-hmm.
The
most popular,
actually, like, the American market is not doing too badly for cars.
The most popular car in the world is the Ford Focus. So they can't be doing too bad.
Ford Focus.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 14th on this list of the top sellers.
Wow. No, every third car here is a Ford.
There's one outside right now. I bloody love that car.
It's a great car. It's a great car.
It's one of the best cars I've ever driven. And it's only a tiny one. It's a really basic Fiesta. You have the Fiesta, don't you? In America.
We might. I mean, I'm not too great with American cars to begin with, because I've sworn never to go back to them. Right. We've got a Toyota Camry, and I just recently traded in another Camry, and we also recently traded in a Honda Accord. Both of those cars that we traded in, we had for 10 plus years,
right,
and never had to do any kind of repairs.
That's
just
really
standard
great.
Maintenance.
That's really great.
Yeah. Whereas my family members who tend to buy Fords and Chevys, I mean, they've got their cars even 1 or 2 years out from purchase. They've got their cars in the shops doing pretty expensive repairs. So,
right.
I've sworn just to stick with the Hondas and Toyotas.
Toyotas, yeah, kind of got a soft spot for them, you know.
What's my dad's one? Is that a Hyundai?
He's got a Hyundai at the moment.
That's what my mum wants.
The coupe, has he got a coupe still?
No, he got rid of that. He's got a midlife crisis mobile.
Yeah.
He got rid of that a while ago.
He's got his executive car back now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It's the i30, I think, or the i40.
The Hyundais have really risen in the U.S. market. They're doing pretty well. Every year, Edmunds gives them higher and higher ratings in competition with some of the other midsize coupes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
When they started off, they were like the Kias of the car market. They were terrible. He didn't want to buy one. They would fall apart.
Yeah.
Well, but then even Kia now, you want a Kia.
Yeah, they've got
apparently
warranty
brilliant.
Deals.
And they have a 7-year warranty. Am I supposed to edit this out? Is this part of the Knight Rider show or what?
We might as well. We said it's all about cars. I mean, that's what it is. That's what the appeal is.
Yeah, and it gets you talking about cars. It's really done that. It was marketed as such, I'm sure.
Here we go. I think it's the i40 my dad's got. This is not even... This is terrible. Is everyone saying this on the show?
That's cars and i40.
Yeah, he's got an i40. That's it. Love that car. But my mum wants an i20, that's it. Well, they look all right as well. I bet you can plug your iPod into them and everything.
Yeah.
That's all I want in a car.
Is that not standard now?
I have no idea. Look, do you know
what? It's
standard
here. I mean, every car that we looked at when we were buying one earlier this year had... I mean, it's just a headphone jack.
I have never bought a car in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
You've had cast-offs, haven't you?
I've had cast-offs. Which is, in some ways, makes me extremely lucky, and I am eternally grateful for it. But it means that I have never been aware of what is currently available on cars, or even a long time ago available on cars. Because, I mean, the car I've got now was my mum's car, and how long have we had it?
Oh, gosh.
Like 5 years?
At least six.
It wants to drop dead. It's so old, that car. And that's got a 6 CD changer, which was pretty cool back when that car was
that
made.
That was really good at
but
the time.
Yeah,
it was really good.
So now they may all have a socket for your iPhone or whatever, but I don't know. So
I mean, it's just a line in. So yeah, every single car that we looked at here this spring had one.
There's one in the car that we've got at the moment, because I've just swapped cars with my mum. So they're coming to America for a month.
Yeah.
And so because her car uses such less petrol than mine, she's let me use that for while they're away. And that's
Does it use less petrol,
it
Governor?
Uses less petrol.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Poor blimey.
And
it bloody does.
It generally wants to be dead far less than my car does. You know the episode of South Park where Stan's grandpa's just trying to get Stan to kill him?
Yeah.
That's the relationship I have with my car. Right, I'll give you some money if you drive me off that high bridge. I'll let you get out first.
Well, you could try doing what Kit does. Have you ever had a car, Rich, that can jump without the use of a ramp?
That's amazing, that bit. That's amazing. If any car could do that, I'd be so happy. Imagine the
you
parking.
You would hate that.
Imagine,
if I had a car that could jump from standing still.
Imagine the parking possibilities. Mental. You'd choose parking better.
I'd leapfrog my way down traffic jams.
Exactly.
That was my biggest problem with Kit. I can buy that he's an intelligent car that can think all by himself and come up with unique answers to questions and pass the Turing test and all that kind of stuff.
He cannot defy the laws of physics.
Yeah, you can't jump without a ramp. What's he doing?
Well, why not? Because he's made out of indestructible material. So
yeah,
why the hell
like,
not?
It can fly. No, it can't. It really can't. Not even a little bit. If that's flying, that's like what chickens do. But even that it can't do. It can maybe go about 6 inches off the ground with a little bit of a speed ramp, but not much. Not
well,
like
that's
that.
The thing about those kind of cars anyway. Those kind of muscle cars were not built to go off the ground. They were built to hug the ground.
Exactly.
Because then
you plant into the ground.
You can get
ground.
More speed out of them. Right. I mean, if you can get less airflow underneath the car and get it lower and set the wheel wells wider, then yeah. You can really get a lot of speed and a lot of turning power and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
But your car's not going to leap a semi like it does in episode 2.
No, it's reminded me of the Top Gear where the guys all took muscle cars through the French Alps. And
right. And
they just, it was when they got to villages, they were okay on the twisty, windy open roads of the Pyrenees. It was beautiful. And they were having such fun going around these S-bends all the way down mountains. And it looked fantastic. And then they'd get to a French village and be unable to move because they were cobbled streets and these cars were slung so low. They couldn't clear anything. So they couldn't get into parking lots. They couldn't turn down side streets. They couldn't do anything. They certainly couldn't go up a slight incline. And there's a few slight inclines in the Pyrenees, funnily enough. So their journey was hampered. They certainly didn't fly anywhere to get out of a sticky situation.
It was fun reading online about how they had to do all those quick cuts away whenever Kit would jump, because whenever he landed, I mean, they would total how many cars?
Oh, goodness knows.
They would, for the jump scenes, apparently use just a fiberglass body so that they could save some cash here and there.
Yeah. And they just
But still, I mean, you land a fiberglass.
Driver.
Yeah. Oh, that was the other neat thing. Did you see about that, how they were driving the car when when Michael was unconscious?
Yeah.
How they had a stunt driver inside the seat.
Inside the seat, yeah. So
inside the seat.
So David Hasselhoff was kind of just sat on this guy's lap. As
that
he
was
disguised as a chair.
I mean, I would have liked to see some diagrams, some schematics for how
I'd
they
like
did that, but I couldn't find it.
A blueprint. Yeah.
The other way, of course, was a lot more mundane. They just had a right driving car so that when he went to autopilot, they could do it that way.
Yeah, that was it. It's a lot easier to do, isn't it? Just have the camera slung at the other side. And there's no cuts need to be made. Bit ingenious.
It does depend on where you're filming and what you're trying to film. If you're trying to get the action in the cockpit so that you can see both sides at the same time, you can't just do a right driving car. So you do have to come up with other ways to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite clever. It's just the storylines, you know. It's the silliness of it and the extent to which he employs forensic science to find a bad guy.
You mean stealing things?
They're stealing things, but in my mind, I'm thinking about the last one that we saw tonight, which was the one about Army. Lad Senior is dead and his daughter's been told that he's been involved in a tragic accident and all that, but he hasn't. No, it's all to do with nuclear tactical weapons, and I love how he found that out, how he found out that they were being disguised when he went into a weapons store that was apparently unlocked, and he found an open tin of royal blue paint with a wet paintbrush and missiles that had been painted with a blue stripe on, which indicated that they were quite safe, really. But underneath, no, there was yellow paint, and that meant, oh, tactical nuclear weapon.
Now, I've never been in the Army, but I can tell you, you can't just walk onto an Army base and walk around and look at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I'm pretty
sure. And then I have
sure.
a big rant about the end of that episode, too. Because, I mean, he interferes with an Army operation. He roughs up a bunch of soldiers.
Yeah.
And he corners, well, he steals a bunch of munitions. He drives onto a test range during an active test.
Yeah.
And he collars, what was it, a colonel or something like that?
Yeah.
And then the episode's over, all happy.
Yeah, no one's
no going. Military. Yeah, no charges.
No one's
no
going to prison
him
for
getting
treason.
Pushed to the ground. Right.
No one's mentioned treason at any point.
And that episode just ends like, hey guys, we got him. It's okay now. It's all over. It's yeah. done. No legal complications.
Do you know what's the most worrying thing about that all that bit, though? Not one of them hit the fucking car. Now, that doesn't instill much confidence in the Army's ability to hit shit. Really? I'm surprised they let that one through.
To be fair, those were some pretty ancient weapons that they were using.
Yeah. It was funny. It was funny. I'm just thinking about the nonsense of having nuclear weapons stacked right next to other shit, and the only way that you can tell which is to look at the coloured band and then refer to a wall chart. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. But
they do just have nuclear shells just sitting around like that in wooden cases, too.
Yeah. Because you keep them there and you just send one really frisky lad to go and get them.
When he sussed out that he was holding a nuclear bomb, he was remarkably calm about it, wasn't he?
Well,
I would shit myself on the spot.
He was playing with it. He was scratching it. He was almost willing it to go off in his hands.
There is that, but what do you mean this is a nuclear bomb? I mean, it's a
nuclear
bomb.
Also, I'm not a scientist, but that's not the delivery method for nuclear
caveats.
Weapons.
I love these caveats. I'm not a butt.
I mean, you don't put those in a howitzer shell. That's not how nukes are delivered.
No. I think that between the three of us, we could come up with better operating procedures than these. Really?
I mean, I have been to a nuclear weapons facility. Are you aware of this?
Oh, really?
I was not aware of this.
My uncle was in the Air Force, and his job for many, many years was going around and decommissioning nuclear silos.
Oh, really?
And he disappeared for about 7 years. We didn't know where he was.
Oh,
we got
gosh.
Word from him once in a while that he was okay, but he was deep classified. And turned out that he was in Italy going around on the trains that were used to carry nuclear armaments around, and he was decommissioning all that.
Right.
But when he came back stateside, he was assigned to North Dakota to decommission some silos out there.
Yeah.
And we got to visit him and go in the silo all the way down. These are Cold War era silos that were being taken apart because they were just, I mean, they were archaic. They were barbaric. They were being run by basically what amounts to ticker tape machines.
Oh, my gosh.
Rich, you would have been appalled at the computers that were down there. I mean, first of all, they were the sizes of refrigerators.
Ooh.
And they were little more than abacuses.
And these were live as your uncle was arriving, yeah?
While we were there, they were live. Oh. I mean, at any given time, these silos could have rolled back and launched.
Oh, gosh.
It was really, really neat, though, seeing how large these armaments were.
Yeah.
It's not a football-sized shell like the one that David Hasselhoff had in this episode. That's just not how it works. They're huge.
They're massive, aren't they? Like, at least 4 foot long.
The payload themselves. I'm not talking about the ICBMs, because those, of course, are huge as well.
Yeah.
But the actual payloads, they're literally the size of, like, a huge truck.
Wow. That's not fun, is it? You think about how much damage they cause.
You know, it was even scarier.
Mm.
The military personnel that were giving us the tour of this facility, at least the parts that we were allowed into,
yeah,
they were telling us, oh yeah, so in case you're ever interested, a missile like this launched from Russia would get here about 8 minutes before we knew that it was coming and could launch ourselves. So thumbs up.
Oh,
well,
dear.
that's the whole problem with nuclear war, is that it's only about getting revenge. Yeah. There's no way to stop them.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that you'd have an inkling before it got there, but I didn't know that, you know, there's no such thing as an early warning, really.
I mean, someone would know. Someone at NORAD or like that would be able to see something coming.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't tell anyone.
Really?
Well, why would you call and say, oh, there's a missile coming, there's nothing you can do about it? They would never do that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I suppose when you put it like that, it's fairly futile. Or is it futile? I'm not sure.
It's futile.
Was it futile?
Futile.
I thought that was the disagreements between servants and their masters. But clearly not.
But yeah, really funny seeing Michael Knight walking around with these football-sized nuclear weapons. and anyone could just walk in.
Handbag portions, weren't they? They were just handbag portions.
Kept safe with a padlock. That's how that worked.
And color code, you just paint over it. Just paint over it. You know, like, I'm sure you have similar things in the US, but over here, the health and safety executive have got this thing that controls substances hazardous to health. Okay. So, you know, basically cleaning chemicals, all kinds of different chemicals that can cause harm to the person who uses them or comes into contact with them. So it's called COSH, which is an amazing acronym. And it's all about substances harmful to health. And there's a big thing in there about not moving liquids from one bottle to another and not changing the labeling on the bottle, you know, always making sure that it is what it is. So this notion of just some blue enamel paint being applied to weaponry was really quite amusing. And it's that kind of thing that just pulls you out and go, oh, well, I don't care if your car gets hit then. But I do, because I like your car more than you. Nice forensics, though.
Rich, are we watching more Knight Rider?
I don't know what we'd say about it.
It's weird, because I wanted to have love for it. I really did, but I can't find what I loved before. I can't find it.
We've kind of had all on talking about it for this episode.
I suppose there might be something to mine from some of the car episodes where you get the evil counterpart, but I'm not sure that I'd be able to come up with enough to do another episode of Remote Patrol.
Me either. I think we should move on from Knight Rider.
It is all fairly plots that exist only to promote the premise, and they're not very well thought out. So
there's not going to really be much of an arc to talk about in terms of who Michael is and do you give a shit anyway.
And it is in that realm of the entirely episodic. I can't remember any kind of overarching plot lines that happened.
No, me neither, but I can't remember anything, so I don't know. But I'm happy to walk away from it. I think we've done it justice, I think.
Yeah.
Have we?
Yeah.
It's fun, but maybe don't get lost in it. And maybe we did have nostalgic feelings about it.
That's all that's left.
Yeah. That's quite sad, isn't it, really?
Do you still love that theme song?
Yes,
I'll
I
admit.
Do.
It's been my ringtone on my phone off and on for the past couple of years, taking places with a few other things. But have you heard Turn It Up by Busta Rhymes?
I have, yeah, with the sample in it.
Using that beat, it's still worth that song. That song's a great driving rhythm. So.
It really is. It's great, and I think that's what I've taken from it. Even though it's still very 80s, you can still date that music, can't you? To the birth and the massive flood of synth pop that was around at that time. But it's really well done. But
there are very few other artifacts from this show, I think, that have survived as well as the theme song or long-lasting or worth revisiting as far as a remake or a reboot. I can't see Knight Rider being a viable franchise in any way in the future.
Yeah. I think it's a shame because as soon as you have something like a car that's not already a classic car, you're in trouble. It's going to date. And of course, those clothes and everything, the way, just the way that things were shot in the United States at that time and the way it looks on camera, on the TV screen, all of these things are of a time. But it's a shame that the car dates it so much. Because you mentioned earlier that we watched Christine the other night. When you watch that, it's a 1958 car. So it doesn't matter when you're watching it because the car is that old anyway. So, but Knight Rider's a futuristic thing and it's wow, you know, it's you can buy something like this, but not like this. You know, it's a special thing, but now we look at it, it's not really very special.
Maybe that's why Back to the Future works so well. Because Back to the Future also has the appeal of the car, the DeLorean.
Yeah.
But even by 1985, the DeLorean was passé.
It was, and now it's a classic. It was always a silly car because you couldn't park it and then get out.
So maybe that's why Back to the Future still works, is because, hey, this isn't supposed to be futuristic. It's supposed to be kind of like a junker.
Yeah, it's done with. It's over, but we've made it into something special. And Christine was the same. She's classic, but she's something special. I think when
have you ever heard? Have you ever heard of My Mother, the Car?
My Mother, the Car? No.
It's widely regarded as one of the worst sitcoms of all time. It ran in the mid-60s for just one season.
Wow.
And you know Jerry Van Dyke.
Yeah.
It starred Jerry Van Dyke as a guy who buys, and this, remember, it's the 60s, he buys a 1928 Porter touring car.
All right. One with the big spindle wheels.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, it's ancient history at that point in time as well.
Yeah.
And it's a forerunner to Knight Rider. It turns out that the car is the reincarnated soul of his mother. And it talks to him through the radio.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, that needed to die.
Yeah.
It did die. Died 30 episodes in.
Yeah, that sounds shocking. Really bad. Really
but at bad. Least they tried that far past car model.
Yeah, yeah. I think the far past car model works better than the future car model. That's what dates it. We can't look back and go, that car's cool. It just looks like a piece of shit that needs junking. Really? It probably, so we've got loads of emissions, and then you'd probably, we had this thing in the UK a couple of years ago called a scrappage allowance that would allow you to scrap a car like that and get some decent money back from the government because they wanted to pay to kill the car and its emissions. So that car would have done a couple, the owner a good bit of good a couple of years ago. The government would have bought it off you to stop you from emitting dangerous chemicals.
I do think that that's probably all that we have to say about Knight Rider. That was, of course, Rich's pick. So, Allison, what are we watching next?
Oh, my gosh.
We are shooting through these. It's been a while since we've had a nice, big, long arc. We did Doc Martin for one episode. We did Arrested Development for one episode. We did... what was the one I picked? Better Off Ted for one episode. We did Knight Rider for one episode. What do you have for us this time?
I don't know. I want to pick something British.
Again, you're gonna go back on the British cycle all this soon?
Why not? You've had two American things in a row.
Yeah, but we're the default.
Oh, really?
Don't you understand?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
is that how it
we're
is?
We're the standard. It is. Well, maybe we'll figure it off or figure it out off the air. Rich, what should we plug?
We can
as
plug,
Allison is thinking.
We can plug all kinds of things. We should definitely plug Atomic Trivia War 9000.
You guys are going to be on there pretty soon. You will have been on there for a long time by the time this episode is released.
Right. Fair enough. We did Iron Sky, didn't we? Allison loved it. She's worrying about whether or not it's her new favorite film instead of Sharknado.
That's
right. Was shocked when Allison said that it inspired her to want to join the Nazi party.
Yeah, me too.
I couldn't believe you said that. And what was that you were talking about? The Jews something deserved what?
Yeah.
I still don't get that. You're a horrible human being.
She was actually
Allison.
Just quite racist, really, wasn't she?
It was upsetting.
It was upsetting.
Any more lies, gentlemen?
All lies. We don't know what happened.
anymore? Just bring him on. Just bring him on.
All lies. She's a lovely so human that's being.
That's Atomic Trivia
War 9000. You know, Rich, we don't talk an awful lot about tech support, Rich.
We don't. I don't know what to say about it, though. I really don't. I mean, it's the show sort of that I do. It seems to be happening about once a week. It's of no predetermined format or length or content. The last two have been me just feeling an urge and sitting in front of a microphone because it happened to be there. But it's exclusively for Simply Everything subscribers as part of a little bit of value add just for them. If you want to get that, you should go and visit simplysyndicated.com/everything and sign up and help us out. And we make content from the money that you give us because that's how the world works. And so that's all I can say about it, really. Will that do?
I think that that'll do. So maybe we should say goodnight to everyone. We'll see everybody next week with some sort of a show, maybe British.
Maybe British. Oh,
maybe
God.
British. I still haven't recovered from Doc Martin.
It was harsh.
I won't give you anything like Doc Martin again, I promise.
We'll pick a genuinely good one.
There's nothing wrong with Doc Martin.
There you go. Oh, the look she just gave me of horror and upset. There's nothing wrong with that show.
There's nothing right with it either.
Do you know what that face was?
Share those photographs of we've got of us in Port Isaac, yeah. Just for Jason's joy. Go look, Jason. That's the building that you saw in that show you love. And then,
I'd like to see them. I loved the landscapes in that. It was a great show for landscapes, for backgrounds, for classical architecture and all that kind of thing.
Then I will share the album with you.
Wanted to murder everyone who was involved with the show. That's all.
That face.
I won't do anything like that to you again. I promise. I promise. I promise. I promise. Hey, Sherlock was British. Yeah.
It was. That was a high water mark for sure.
And Prime Suspect was British. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, there's some really good stuff, and I'm not because Doc Martin was the best version of all of those kinds of shows, and that was my intention: show him the best one, and then put the rest away. We don't need any of those kinds of shows anymore.
So let's see what we can find for next week.
Okay.
All right. I think it's a good time for everybody to say goodbye.
Goodbye.